Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Off the ball, rugby.
The big shot from Sam Prendergast on James O'Connor. Like we've talked a lot ad nauseum around his physicality. If it's there once, it's there multiple times.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Final One Standing by William Hill on Off the Ball. Download the app and play today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
Yes, indeed. You're welcome along to Final One Standing. We're looking ahead to the weekend's Premier League action, and Final One Standing on Off the Ball is brought to you by William Hill. You can download the app and play today. It's for over 18s only. See gamblingcare.ie for more. In studio today, we have Shane Hannan. Hello, Shane.
Good afternoon. Good morning. Good evening.
Hello. Eve Conway. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. And Mick McCarthy, who is still alive in the first Final One Standing of the season while hearing Christmas music in the shops. That is extraordinary, Mick.
Thank you, Owen. I'm very taken aback by your pride in this.
I am proud. I've been away for the last couple of weeks. Granted, one of them has been a massive international break where this has had no figure in your life whatsoever, but you've had at least one more win. What happened last time?
I had Forest. Who went 1-0 down to Leeds and then 1-3-1. Fairly easily in the end, but everybody got through last week. So obviously the three people who are still in the Off the Ball League all survived, and almost everybody in the overall William Hill 500 grand one survived. Only 12 people who went for Crystal Palace, I think, were eliminated.
This could be your last couple of weeks ever working for Off the Ball.
I don't know, these days on inflation, probably.
What teams do you have left that you haven't picked?
So, not that many at this stage. So, my only home options this week are Burnley, Wolves, or Leeds. And I haven't picked an away team yet. So, I kind of think my only option... Sorry, this is in the overall one. I have... I might have to go for Villa in that one, away to Leeds. It'll be my first away pick. But I do, in the off-the-ball one, still have Bournemouth, who are home to West Ham. But they were beaten 4-0 by Villa the last time, and West Ham have won their last two games in a row. So I'm just tearing my hair out. It's absolutely insane. It's a terrible affliction to be this far into it.
What would you do with the money?
Do you want the boring answer?
Yeah.
I'd pay off our mortgage and go to Disneyland.
Love that. Yeah. Fair enough. So not much other
than... Start again.
Not much takes other than the greatest moment of your children's lives and your the most important debt that we all put around our necks being paid off. No pressure whatsoever. Hopefully Aston Villa get the job done again.
But look, there's 2,500 people who also want to do all that, I'm sure.
Is that all there is?
That's a lot of people still, though.
Yeah, but you're leaning towards Villa, it sounds.
I want to win the off-the-ball one, even though I don't get to keep the money, but I kind of feel like I'll be robbing the other two people, though, that are still in it. There's something mean about that, but I have to remember charity important.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, we're going to hear from Sam very shortly. He's actually on the line right now, Sam Norris of William Hill. Sam, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah, how are you guys?
All good, all good. It's quite extraordinary that we do have somebody here in studio who's made it from week one to, what is it, week 12 at this stage? Yeah, week 12. In terms of that coterie of players, a very small percentage of players who are still in from the very first evening of the Premier League this year, what are the trends that you're seeing this week?
Yeah, that is a phenomenal effort to get this far. Can count themselves amongst the 1%-ish of players who've made it from the start of the season to now. Pre-season, all of our analysts here at William Hill were saying they think it'll take 12 or 13 weeks to give away the jackpot. They're not that far off. I think it's going to go a bit longer than that for the 500k, but yeah, very much hotting up now. In that big league, the 500k league, obviously players are running out of teams that they've got to choose from. Crystal Palace account for about a third of the picks this week. Most people have got them left. They take on Wolves, who are the only winless side in the top however many divisions now. I'm a Wolves fan myself, so I've lost count of how far you have to go down the pyramid to find another winless team. Very much get the angle there with Palace. Bournemouth are the second most popular pick in the 500k league. Then Manchester United to beat Everton. Those three teams account for about two-thirds of the total picks in the big league. It's a little bit different across the board. Liverpool are the most popular pick across all of the leagues this week to beat Forest at home. And Palace is still second in that regard as well. So, yeah, those playing for 500k are hoping that that Wolves are going to taste defeat again this weekend. And they might just be right as well.
Yeah, it's like really, really interesting. Like, I think the home thing, the thing that Mick has just said there a moment ago, I mean, maybe inform some of the most important thing behind his logic all season long. It just feels that that has just weighted massively in terms of how people who are actually good at this game, unlike a lot of us here, kind of proceed with their logic.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I went out in week two, so I'm the last person to be to be talking about how best to play the game. But yeah, you're right. Those, you know, those sides that are home and are odds on are always popular. And don't forget, two differing deadlines this week as well. If you're in an existing league, you've got to have the bets on by the 12:30 kickoff, which is Burnley Chelsea. Obviously, Chelsea, they are away, but they are odds on. And for new leagues, if you're getting involved with a brand new league this week, the deadline is 3 p.m. so you can swerve the lunchtime game in that regard, which is why we don't see Chelsea quite as high up in the numbers as we might do, because they're not available for people playing in a new league this week.
With regards to a couple of the games this weekend, I think Northland and Derby is the big fixture this weekend. But before we get into that, could I just ask you about the odds regarding the title race? I think ominous is the word that's most used around Manchester City at the moment. We've had the Gabriel injury during the international break. There is a possibility that they go into the game against Tottenham at the weekend only 1 point clear of Manchester City, given 2-3 weeks ago we were all saying that you can forget about the title, Arsenal have it sewn up. So what are you seeing in the market?
Yeah, and our odds, I kind of like that as well. They swing with sort of public opinion. They can be quite volatile because we've got Arsenal odds on at 4-6. They've got that 4-point cushion. But as you say, that could be largely eroded by the end of the weekend. And then we'll be talking about Arsenal odds against, you would have thought. They haven't really drifted that much off the back of the Sunderland draw last week. Man City are second in at 9-4. Liverpool, the only other team at a single-figure price at 9-1. It's 25-1 bar. The top three teams in the betting. And there's only Chelsea and Man United who are a double figure price. After that, you're talking triple figures and bigger. Sunderland are 100-1 and they're ahead of the rest of the league in that regard. But yeah, Arsenal odds on at the moment at 4-6. That could easily be odds against come sort of Sunday evening.
In terms of specifics then, for the North London derby at the Emirates Stadium on Sunday evening, it's a game we're going to have live here on Off the Ball at 4:30. What are you looking at with regards to Arsenal versus Spurs?
Yeah, Arsenal priced up at 2-5 in the betting. Tottenham are 13-2. The draw is 17-5. Kind of, you've highlighted it. The key here is going to be the injuries for Arsenal. Gabriel would obviously be a huge miss. I think Calafiori is a doubt as well. We know that they've built everything they've done this season on a watertight backline, a very resolute defence. In fact, prior to that 2-2 draw with Sunderland, they were on a run from the start of October to that game of 8 straight wins to nil, which is pretty incredible. The win to nil is 5-4. I still think that's going to be popular this weekend just because that's the MO for Arsenal. That's the blueprint. That's the way they've won their games. So 5-4 Arsenal win to nil, again, I think will still be popular despite the injury issues that they're having. And here's a really bizarre one, which doesn't help us that much in the betting, but I've got to throw it in. 4 times in the last 5 North London derbies, Tottenham have scored an own goal. Now, the only way to bet this is in the first goal method market. It's 22-1 that the first goal of the game is an own goal. That might just be worth a little small investment. Weird that they've scored 4 own goals in the last 5 meetings with Arsenal, have Tottenham. So they've been masters of their own downfall in this fixture, really.
Wow, that's very, very interesting. So Arsenal strong favourites for that one. I think we're going to be chatting in a bit more depth about Newcastle versus Manchester City here as well. Like, I mean, not to use a cliche, but does Newcastle's poor form go out the window a small bit, given this is Saturday, 5:30 p.m. It feels like the most hostile time slot upon which to visit St. James's Park, and obviously on the back of the international break. Maybe form does go out the window. So what are you thinking about this one?
They're 12-5 in the betting. Newcastle, Manchester City are even money. The draw chalked up at 13-5. I would be a bit nervous for Newcastle in this one. They've got a horrible head-to-head record against Manchester City, winning just one of their last 35 Premier League meetings. And whilst that stretches over a long, long period of time, when you just focus on Eddie Howe's managerial career, he's winless in 18 Premier League matches against Manchester City. That might be an even more damning statistic. He's lost 16 and drawn two of his games against Man City. He can't seem to find the formula against Manchester City. That's the most, by the way, that a manager has ever faced another opponent in the Premier League without winning a game. So he's long overdue a victory over Manchester City, is Eddie Howe. And I do kind of worry for them, Newcastle. You're looking at player markets as well. I think Jeremy Doku is going to be very interesting in this. I thought he was the best player on the pitch when they beat Liverpool 3-0. He scored in that one. He's been very productive over the course of the international break. He created 8 chances against Kazakhstan when Belgium drew 1-1. All right, they didn't actually convert any of those chances, but those underlying numbers will be good. He scored a couple of goals against Liechtenstein, got an assist there as well. He's 5-2 for an assist. 17-5 to score is Jeremy Doku. And you've got the score and assist, or score or assist markets that you can play in as well. I think that could be the cornerstone of Bet Builders today. I've been very impressed with him recently, and obviously played well for Belgium. And in terms of Epic Boosts as well, I can't tell you what the Epic Boost will be on this match, but what I will tell you is that the last 5 Manchester City Epic Boosts have been Erling Haaland to score. So check back with us Saturday morning, see right. if that's the case again.
Okay, we're checking in before kickoff on that one. Elsewhere, what else is catching your eye, Sam? I know Liverpool versus Forest is one that's going to garner a big audience here, and the same with Manchester United against Everton on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, you'd think Liverpool will kind of get things back on track a little bit. It's been a bit of a sketchy season for them. They're 2-5 to beat Forest, who are priced up at 11-2. The draw there is 18-5. And Manchester United are fancied for a home win as well. Not quite as short. They're 3-4 with the draw 11-4 and Everton priced up at 17-5. I think the one that's probably sticking out on the coupon this weekend is Sunderland. They're 13-5 to go to Fulham and get a win. It's not been a great season for Fulham. Obviously, Sunderland enjoying a tremendous time of things at the moment. So they stand out a bit at 13-5. They're away from home, but big priced underdogs, given that, well, they're absolutely flying at the moment. Obviously, took a point off Arsenal when we last saw them. Scored against Arsenal, which hardly anybody has been able to do. So, yeah, I think Sunderland stand out a bit at 13-5 if you're after maybe a touch of value this weekend.
Okay, really interesting weekend in store. Mick will lock in his pick before we wrap up, and hopefully we'll be looking for your advice this time next week, Sam, as Mick goes into week 13. Thank you very much. Enjoy the football.
Good stuff. Yeah, best of luck to Mick as well. Fingers crossed.
Cheers. That's Sam Norris there on the line from William Hill. Let's have a look at some of these fixtures in a bit more depth then. Pep Guardiola in his press conference today is saying that the real season starts now. The fixtures pile up. Things get really, really interesting. I know we're in this kind of state of mind where we're like, God, a break from international football. We just want the tripart thing to just kind of last forever. But really, this is where we lean in and where football becomes unbelievably enjoyable over the next month and a half as the fixtures pile up. So let's start with that North London derby. Eve, last time I was on Final One Standing with you, I was questioning your negativity around Thomas Frank and Tottenham Hotspur. And I was saying, they've scored so many goals. You're looking good in the Premier League. The very next day, they had the lowest XG any team has ever put up. They got hammered at home to Chelsea. There were boos around the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. So gaze into the crystal ball here, Eve, and tell us what's going to happen on Sunday.
Well, we're going to lose, but that's not...
Tottenham are going to lose, is what I say. Just in case anybody thought you were an Arsenal fan.
No.
Off the bat.
listen, it's almost like this fixture is an aberration because Tottenham haven't won at the Emirates since 2010. And they don't tend to win against Arsenal much, unfortunately. I think 2022 under Conte was the last win, kind of that May
they hammered
fixture.
Them.
Yeah, that when Rob Holding was sent off that
yes.
game. What I will say about... I've calmed down from the Chelsea fixture now. I was nervous about it and then I was furious about it. But we had a good kind of Champions League fixture then following that. As we had Keith Tracy on the breakfast show this morning and he couldn't get his head around the negativity from Spurs fans who were saying they're 2 points off third. But as somebody rightly pointed out, we're also 2 points off 12th. So it's still all very tightly congested together on the table and with fixtures coming like thick and fast in the festive period. Tomorrow, I think it's more a case of try really hard not to lose, which Thomas Frank should hopefully be good at. You'll see Palinha and Bentancur again, I'd say, in that kind of midfield role. And then there's going to be six or seven defenders on that pitch, or defensive-minded players on that pitch.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Do we have any concerns with regards to Arsenal's defence in general at the moment? Like, are we just automatically saying that this is one of those things where they've signed really well in the summertime in this department in terms of Incapié and Mosquera coming into the club, and Gabriel's injury is not going to be overly effective? Because if you look at your Excel spreadsheet, their attributes are very close to Gabriel's. I'm a little bit concerned, maybe not about this fixture specifically, but I'm quite concerned about what the impact of the Gabriel injury is going to do to Arsenal's title challenge. I think they have proven that they can have a season that gets thrown off the rails in dramatic fashion over the past couple of years. And until they do not do that, I will continue to think that that's a chance. The idea of Manchester City breathing down their neck, and now their second most important player after Declan Rice this season, getting a significant enough injury, I think these are the sorts of things that could expose a flakiness in a team. So,
But all of that has logic, but I think it comes from a point of assuming that there's a flakiness there.
Correct.
Underneath, you know. Yeah, and I do think that I think that Arsenal are built in not just their personnel, but in the way they play and their style to be solid, you know. And sometimes we've been critical of Arteta putting that extra player in there over times. And I really hope during this Gabriel injury that that isn't an invitation to go overly negative, because I think you would put in, if Mosquera played very well when Saliba was out injured, so like, let's see if he can do that again. Maybe I don't know if he's a left foot, right foot.
That's the
is
thing.
He worried about those things? So who would it be then?
Incapié.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Someone I've probably read the name of a lot more than heard over the years. Okay, right. So he comes in. You know, that's what you have cover for. There's a lot of people, and I'm not one of them, who would question how good Gabriel actually is. You know, it's an ongoing debate. And I think what one thing here is we will probably find out now in the next 2 or 3 months, or the next month and a half or so, just how good Gabriel really is. But I do think that, like, having that set up and having, I don't think Calafiori is out for any kind of a significant.
He could play this weekend.
Yeah, so I don't think he's out any kind of significant. And having Timber and him in there with Zubimendi in front, I think that's just it's not injury proof, but I think it's a really, really good setup. And I don't think, whatever about disimproving without a really, really good player like Gabriel, I don't think it's a flakiness.
No.
And I think that we concern for flakiness in Arsenal is because of maybe something that was there before, and I think a mental fragility that I think they've possibly overcome or look like they're on the way to, but can be accused of in the past. I don't know if it's been an actual physical flakiness where they're just going to, you know, open up all of a sudden. They've been a very good defensive team for quite a while now.
Very
good goalkeeper as well.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the goalkeeper hasn't been required for the majority of the run that Sam was talking about there. David Raya's most involved game for Arsenal in a long time was actually the game against Sunderland. Yeah. So Sunderland exposed Arsenal to a degree to which they hadn't been exposed throughout the entirety of October. So this is all part of the paranoia. And then it's the City factor as well. Like, these things don't exist in isolation. Again, to go back to what Pep is saying today, he's talking about the feeling that he had in the past where he had to fight incredibly against Liverpool, the feeling where you can't drop too many points. When the distance is too big, it's difficult. Now that the international break is done, we have games every 3 or 4 days and the real season starts now. It kind of feels like he's got into, like, you know, this is real mode at this point. And it kind of feels that Manchester City are not going to drop too many points over the coming months.
But are you in a position where you kind of see, I've heard a couple of people say, like, Arsenal are one of those teams because they haven't done it before and because they've been second so many times, they need to walk the title.
Yeah.
They need to do what Liverpool did in 2019.
I feel that way
To get over the line. Because it's one of those things, I understand the feeling, but it's not overly realistic. You know what I mean? If they're the best team, they might have to win a tight one, you know? And I completely see where you're coming from. I don't even, I'm not even disassociating from it. I just wonder, are this team that have their own story? And are there to tell it and are able to prove themselves. And I think this is a good week for them because it's such a big match. You come back from international break, you're home to your biggest rivals, you're going to be mad up for it. They're not in the best of form, and I don't think they're as suited to play them as, say, as Sunderland might be, or as teams might expose them later on. But, you know, they have been just passing the test consistently all the way through so far.
Yeah, it's worked out well. A couple of big home games after the international break, like to have Bayern come into town as well on Wednesday night, Chelsea next weekend, like a few big fixtures for Arsenal in the next week or so. But I wonder, were there any concerns as an Arsenal fan watching the Sunderland game? Were you concerned at the full-time whistle, or were you thinking that this is a Sunderland team that are doing really well? It's actually, maybe in hindsight, not going to be a bad result come the end of the season to get a point at the stadium.
Should have won the game as well.
Yeah.
I think the result, a draw at Sunderland is not a bad result, no matter what stage of the table you're at. And I think Arsenal played very well in the third quarter of that game when they were under the pump, when they had to come out swinging in that second half. And they ended up doing enough to win the game, and they didn't win the game. So I think that's one of those that you just kind of chalk off. But as I say, two factors. One is that the amount of opportunities that Sunderland created, it was the first time that had happened in quite some time. So is that going to be a one-off, or is it going to be the beginning of a trend? You lose your best defender in the middle of that. Then you start to worry it could be the start of a trend.
Yeah. That Sunderland Arsenal game was the first. I think that was the first game week of the new Final One Standing League, and I chose Arsenal. But I said to myself,
away from home.
I said to myself, I either will jinx Arsenal, which would be good for as a Tottenham fan, or I will get through to the next round. So it was kind of a win-win for me, even though I lost.
Yeah, if it's Brian Brobbey's goal was inspired by Eve Conway, that's what the situation that transpired there. So, yeah, if you had a clean slate, would you be backing in this game, Mick, as the Oracle?
I wouldn't be going for either of them, but I think Arsenal will win. I do. Sorry, Eve.
Spurs away from home.
I don't know.
But Spurs away from home. And they are the strength.
Freer and everything like that.
Ironically, maybe I'd feel more confident with Spurs winning at the Emirates this season than at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Yeah, I understand that. It's not necessarily too much about Spurs. I think Arsenal, with possibly City joining them, then we'll have to wait and see. I still think it's only about 3-4 weeks since City lost badly at Villa. You know, let's wait and see on the City thing, right? But I think Arsenal are on a different level than Spurs. I think they're a better football team.
They're further along in their journey.
Home,
they're very solid.
I would naturally pick them, you know.
Tottenham won at the Etihad, let's not forget, as well this season. So they've already gone to one of the top two and got all three
points. That's
fair, yeah. Let's move on to Newcastle versus Manchester City then. I feel like the bit of the reading that I've done and the bit of podcast listening that I've done over the last 24 hours in terms of previewing this weekend would suggest I'm out on a bit of a limb here expecting a really, really tough game and that Manchester City might actually drop points at Newcastle United.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you said the timing. Saturday 5:30 at St James's just gives people a modicum of hope that this could be a decent game. But then you look at the fact that Man City can, you know, ahead of Arsenal's game on Sunday, move to within a point of them, put the pressure on them massively. So Pep Guardiola will be using that in his pre-match discussion, you'd imagine, that we need to put the pressure on Arsenal for every single week. And every week that they have a game before Arsenal, that will probably help them. Newcastle's so strange. When Harvey Barnes scored that goal against Brentford just before the international break, I'm thinking, yeah, they've responded well to the West Ham defeat, but then they go on and lose 3-1 in that game as well. And they look brittle. And a team that I don't know if Eddie Howe knows where they're headed over the next couple of months. Like, between now and Christmas, it's going to be massive for Newcastle, and it's going to dictate whether they're looking up or down. But I don't see this as being a close game whatsoever. Like a sort of a 2-0, 3-0 away win. Which,
is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, which I wouldn't usually call at St James's Park because it's horrible. But they looked so brittle before the international break, and maybe the international break came at a good time. But they look shattered. On confidence and shorn of it. So that's...
Those were away games, though.
They capitulated to Brentford, though. It was kind of shocking, you know, to see that they just sort of And Brentford, very, very hard team. We've talked about this a good bit on the show, that they're a very, very hard team to play against at home. But at the same time, you go 1-0 up. It was Brentford sauntered to the win in the end. I think that... There's a sort of a sense of the St. James's Park game as a barometer. You know, Arsenal won there, that's massive. Liverpool obviously had that mad game there earlier in the season as well, when we were kind of trying to judge them and got over the line. But I don't know if this I don't know if we're living in the past a little bit with what this Newcastle team is this year. They did the same thing the last time they were in the Champions League. They just did not perform in the league and they didn't have it. They weren't able to turn it on.
And yeah. They face a very difficult away game at Marseille then on Tuesday. So where your focus is as well.
Tight turnaround, yeah.
Very tight turnaround.
Their focus has to be here though now because like this is, you know what I mean? They're, what are they, 14th in the league.
Mm.
Like, I can't imagine... You know, they've done okay in the Champions League. It's easy to qualify from the Champions League. I think they have to be looking towards their domestic form, but I just don't know if they're able to. You know what I mean? They're not a squad that seems to be set up for fighting on two fronts.
Yeah, Dan Byrne got sent off in that Brentford game, so he's suspended as well. Like, when you're coming up against Erling Haaland, you don't want any of your first-choice defenders to be out of these games. So I'd fear for them, which is a strange thing to say at St James's Park, but I do fear for Newcastle.
What do you need to see from Manchester City to be more convinced of them? Because you're...
A run. Because their performances that I have seen them in, like obviously the last day against Liverpool, have been good enough. But they haven't been consistent. You know, like, again, I was very wary of that Villa game. And again, like, we're talking about like Newcastle being a barometer. Villa Park's an insanely hard place to go and get anything from for any team, right? So it's not even that they lost, but even just watching it as a, you know, a fan of the opposition, there was a feeling that like, oh, we might have enough here, you know, like early enough on in the game. And, you know, there was chances on both sides, but City didn't break them down. And Haaland had one chance in that game. And that was their only real chance of scoring. And you're like, even though they dominated possession and did all the old things that City used to do, there was no real bite to it. So, you know, I just need to see like that almost not happening again when they go to these tougher grounds. And Newcastle it would definitely convince me. It would definitely put me on the path to convincing, I suppose, if they went and sort of did a very, very different performance than the one they had at Villa Park. These are tough away grounds of these kind of like second tier teams. Which I probably haven't seen so far.
Just annihilated Liverpool. I think
they did, but we have to take Liverpool's current crisis into account.
Yeah,
in that. Now they did, but that's super impressive. Of course it is. But again, it's winning the league isn't like what you can do on one-off games.
And look, there might have been a situation there where Jeremy Doku just has a bit of an all-timer that day. I know he's in brilliant form and he's probably going to be on the team of the year at the end of the season. But even at the end of the year, you'll probably look back in that Liverpool game and still earmark it as the high point in Doku's season. He was good in the international break as well, so wouldn't be particularly surprised to see him.
Liverpool have also lost four of their last five league games, or more than that, probably.
Take the Doku thing for example. He's up against Conor Bradley and Konate, and maybe a Gravenberch coming back to help. And like, you can kind of tell there was maybe something of a few shambolic moments from Konate, say 1-1. Certainly, the Doku goal from the edge of the box. Was Gravenberch doing enough in terms of protecting him? Was Bradley hung out to dry? All those things to one side. The quality of those three players, like, you're not going to have a whole pile of higher caliber players on the right hand side of any defence that he's going to come up against. And still he managed to hit those heights. What new thing can we say about Haaland this season? Like, there's nothing left to say. And I think they've even made him more central this season. And you have the likes of Nico O'Reilly and Nico Gonzalez actually growing into the year. And then you throw in the new signings of Cherki and Reinders, and they're probably going to hit a higher height as the season goes on as well. So
The other way of looking at it is though that they have a kid playing left back who might,
he's fast.
Yeah, absolutely, but I don't think it's his most natural position, and you know, it's something that could go against them and possibly
win nothing with kids.
Both their fullback positions are questions, and those questions could be answered. I just have this sense of inevitability about Man City. I think is gone since last season. I just don't know if we have that anymore. I think once you lose that in sport. Look at the Dubs. Like, the Dubs won in All Ireland after the six in a row, but they were never the same again. There was never this guarantee that, like, it's inevitable Dublin will do this again. It just goes away.
Who's winning the Premier League?
Arsenal.
City.
Arsenal.
Oh, gotta even that up and say City at this point.
I feel like you think it's City.
I'm worried for Arsenal. Let's move on to the next fixture, which let's do. We do a bit on Liverpool.
That's Forest. Kerry Yerra. See, this is like, it's classic. He's bringing the stuff into the.
But it's not Yerra-ing for the sake of kind of like, oh, they won't hang me on this. I'll keep them all ticking over Arsenal, Saunders Lee. This is panic. Like, this is.
But there's no reason.
It's not Yerra-ing
just
yet. It's a different
thing. Arsenal have been ultra impressive for 95% of the season, maybe more. Like, there's no reason really for you to be worried.
It doesn't really matter. I'm a neutral observer in all of this as a deemed professional. I'll sleep well at night. Actually, no, I sleep terribly at night, regardless of what happens. So it's all good. Liverpool versus Nottingham Forest. What's going to happen here? Do we think that Liverpool are going to bounce back from that Manchester City no-show? Do we think it's going to be one of those where they come out fighting and Mo Salah answers his critics and Arne Slot is racing down the touchline against a resurgent Forest under Sean Dyche?
I know it's a prediction show, but we don't know. Like, cause it's just
after the international break, you should be making
Sean Dyche's
perfect predictions.
Yeah, Sean Dyche is like, they got their win. They beat like a really poor Leeds team at the City Ground. But like, if Forest are back to being a competent team again, this is the last team that Liverpool want to be playing on the return. Right. Let's kickstart our season. You know, like, their form is awful. Like, I'm just looking even at their thing here. Like, they've a +1 goal difference Liverpool have at the moment. I always find that's a mad way of looking. You know, it's like they've won 6 games, they've lost 5, they've drawn nothing, and their goal difference is +1. They've been a fairly consistent calamity at this stage. You know, and don't forget, they won their first 5 games.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
They're now without Wirtz and Conor Bradley, actually, now both confirmed out for this
week.
Yeah. Well, not that that's going to make a huge difference. He doesn't really be in.
The only thing is, I mean, players come back.
Alisson being back, by the way, that's massive. Remember that Philly at the Anfield against Manchester United? He looked so fragile, if you use that word again, but fragile. And Alisson being in that team changes things.
I did wonder if Wirtz and his form for Germany might actually give him something that could transfer at Liverpool. So I think Liverpool just need everybody on the pitch and need everybody available at this point. But I'm not ready to say that Liverpool are going to have like a Manchester City season like last year.
They'll go on a run. Like, I'd be very, very surprised if they don't get into Champions League. Like,
but it's not going to. You could
just don't know when it'll start.
Yeah, and like I know we've spoken about it quite a lot, but even seeing Andy Robertson talk about Diogo Jota during the week.
Yeah.
Just because it's kind of like we're constantly reminded of it and we constantly mention it, usually in the last 2 minutes of a piece of why are Liverpool so bad this season? But I think that's probably a reminder of just how acute the feeling is amongst the players. I think that probably goes for a lot of the Portuguese players in the Premier League, full stop.
It would also explain a rapid start to the season. You know, that's tapered off when the emotion and the has levelled off and then the reality is kind of setting in, you know.
You also talked about Eddie Howe and his struggles against Man City, but like Sean Dyche just strikes me as that kind of manager, and he does have a good record against some of the big teams as well. And I know he's fresh into this Forest gig, but Forest took 4 points off Liverpool last season.
Won at Anfield when nobody was, you know.
Exactly.
And they were brilliant that day. They totally deserved it as well.
So, yeah.
One of the other pieces of big news that's come out today is that Cole Palmer has broken his toe. So he's come back from a groin injury and he's stubbed his toe. It broke, so he's going to be missing for the Burnley away game tomorrow. I think in the same bracket as Liverpool, that just wouldn't trust them to put together a title challenge over the course of the season. God. But they are only 6 points off the top of the table.
Palmer is like,
he stubbed it on a door. Apparently,
he could be out for so long sometimes that like did you hear Palmer's name at all in all the conversations about Rodgers and Jude Bellingham this week?
No.
You know, like, he's almost not part of the conversation. It was like 6 months ago that was his Bellingham or Palmer.
What about Phil Fulham's assist though for us?
Put it on a plate,
something else.
Do you know what I mean? I think it's so
especially leading up to
you can go down so quickly in a World Cup year.
Cup, it's kind of exactly what he didn't want to happen, and for not to happen on a training ground or on a pitch or anything, to happen at home is just a bit of an odd one.
Yeah, so that's a further blow to Chelsea. Will we round things off on United versus Everton? Monday Night Football. I mean, this is a pretty tasty fixture for Monday Night Football. To be fair, David Moyes has a famously terrible record at Old Trafford, including for Manchester United.
Very good.
But he does, all things considered, have a terrible record with Everton at Old Trafford as well. So no problem for a resurgent United chain?
From October Manager of the Month, Ruben Amorim.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Player of the Month, Brian Mbeumo. It's a strange one because, like, Old Trafford is not the kind of place that a Monday 8 p.m. fixture strikes fear necessarily. Like, it's not like Selhurst Park or a City Ground. I don't think Old Trafford on a Monday night under lights really scares any team. They've had some terrible results, United at home.
What time slots do scare teams?
Yeah, good question. I don't think any time
half 12 scares Liverpool.
Yeah, true. Yeah. I don't know. Like this United team have shown, like, there's a lot of concern about the Africa Cup of Nations and losing the likes of Brennan Bumo and Ahmad and Mazraoui, maybe to a lesser extent. Onana will be fine. He can head off. But there are the couple of draws before the international break. Like the table could have looked so much, you know, if United had held on to beat Spurs, obviously they ultimately had to grab a result at the end. But also against Forest, you know, again gave up a lead and fell asleep after half time. But the table could have looked so much better. Look, it could have looked so much worse as well. But if United pick up a win on Monday night, all of a sudden, you know, they're up there and they're certainly targeting. I don't know what United are targeting this season. Probably sixth is the limit of their expectations. You would have to say sixth, I think, would be really good considering they were 15.
If they win on Monday night, they'll have 14 points out of 18.
Yeah.
Like that's a run then.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think if you go get, you add one, you kind of, the two draws on the back of the three wins, you add to that, you sandwich that with a win, bookend it with a win. I think you have to have real conversations about United not being in form.
United strand, you know. Get the scissors out is what you're saying, basically.
Well, they're unbeaten in October and Everton haven't won away since September.
Yeah.
So
you're telling me there's a chance.
I like Everton, though, I have to say. I don't know. I think there are a couple of players short, but there's something about them I like. I don't know. I think that combination of Grealish and Ndiaye is exciting. It's just that they have no striker.
Yeah. You know,
that's like the rumour, isn't it, for January? Are they going to go after Troy Parrott on loan? That's
what
people are. I would say no, but
yeah, no to from Troy's standpoint on that one.
Very
yeah,
so.
Yes to Everton. We got to wrap this guy in cotton wool.
From a United standpoint, like Lisandro Martinez's imminent return is hopefully it's like that could be a game changer. It's like getting a new signing into the team.
How's he going to handle the fact that we're going back to George Grainball?
Yeah, good point.
Like 4'7".
It's hard to know, but they've like, and it's probably, this sounds terrible, but it's probably a good time for Benjamin Sesko to be injured. Like he just hasn't. He has been firing on all cylinders in recent games, and he's obviously been unlucky with injury in the last game as well. So I like the United team when you have Cunha, Mbeumo, and maybe a Mount thrown into that front three as well. So that'll be an opportunity for them to do that again on Monday night. And I see United winning this game. And I haven't been confident talking about United in recent years, obviously, but this run has certainly brought back belief. Enter 3-1. Home defeat to Everton on Monday night, but there is something about the United team. They are, again, I'll use this word, less fragile than they have been in recent years.
Do you think Manchester United are going to finish higher than Liverpool in the Premier League table?
No, I don't think so.
Do you think they'll finish higher than Tottenham Hotspur?
Yes.
Do you think they'll finish higher than Chelsea?
No.
Okay. So I think Champions League.
I don't know if Champions League, because I have the feeling that
yeah, fifth, sorry,
but could, like, a, I don't fifth know if Sunderland can maintain it, but like,
oh yeah, it is.
like Sunderland, Bournemouth, these sort of teams can't.
You left out Villa.
Yeah, true.
Yeah,
maybe sixth or seventh is a realistic target.
And Sunderland,
plenty of time next week to talk about Aston Villa. We've indulged your ego enough.
No, I meant in terms of United finishing ahead of them to get into the Champions League, which they would have to,
of course. And same with Everton, Newcastle, and Fulham.
Well,
Bournemouth.
That's unfair. They haven't finished in the top six in the last 2 years.
Shall you be selecting Aston Villa this weekend, Mick, in order to give your kids the trip of a lifetime to Disneyland and also pay off your mortgage?
Villa or Palace? I have to pick an away team. It's terrible. Villa or Palace?
You can take off those.
We have to go, right? Wolves have a new manager. That's a disaster for me. Mm-hmm. Wolves were the easy team to go for. And it's like, I ultimately think Rob Edwards will fail, but he might not fail for the first 2 weeks.
Yeah. So you still have Villa available? So you've held on to Villa for this long?
Back. Again, I have them in the overall league. I don't have them. I had a swap with Bournemouth. I have Bournemouth available in the off the ball league.
Okay.
I don't have Villa in that.
So for the big money league, you have to choose Palace or Villa away from home.
Villa or Sunderland away to Fulham.
It feels like you needed a little bit more time to ruminate on this.
I need more time.
We will come back to you.
I don't want to give it away either.
On that. Mick McCarthy, Eve Conway, Shane Hannan, thank you very much for your company. Folks, enjoy the weekend. That has been Final One Standing, and it's been brought to you by William Hill. You can download the app and play today. Over 18s only. See gamblingcare.ie for more. Chat to you next week.
The Final One Standing by William Hill on Off the Ball. Download the app and play today. 18 plus gamblingcare.ie.